Blog Talk Radio. Baseball fans, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell, and I am excited about this baseball season. I've been talking some baseball over the last couple weeks with a variety of different guests. We had Lenny Melnick on to just talk about the league in general. That was one of our first podcasts here on a podcast to be named later. We also talked with Jay Jaffe. We talked about the Hall of Fame. That has done extremely well. We're getting a lot of listens on that. Very excited to have people actually listening to the podcast here. Very, very exciting to see those Jay Jaffe numbers. And granted, he works for Sports Illustrated, and he tweeted out that he was going to be on the show. So that definitely helped us boost those numbers. But it's good to hear that people from minorleagueball.com are going over and listening to the podcast, as well as anyone who's following me on Twitter. So that's exciting. We also just recently posted, I believe it was this morning, my article as well as my conversation here on the podcast with Rob Nyer. He's on there. So if you want to head over to minorleagueball.com or follow me on Twitter, you can get a link to that as well. Love talking baseball with Rob Nyer. We talked about the winter meetings and some just general off-season hot stove baseball stuff, the history of it, as well as looking at spending and all those kinds of things. So it's exciting that we've got the podcast off and running on a good pace. Again, Lenny Melnick, Jay Jaffe, and Rob Nyer, three really good guests, batting 1, 2, 3. Now we're going to start our baseball series. And what I want to do, and maybe it's a little bit too aggressive or too maybe it's too large a project, I don't know, but I'd like to do a podcast where we discuss every single team individually from now until opening day. And granted, it is only January 12th, but we got January, February, March, April, May, you know, and that's already into the season. So January, February, March, and what, April 6th or 7th is when the season starts. So that means we've got about 2.5 months to try to get through all of the different teams. So we're going to try to do that. And we're going to be starting that today. Lenny Melnick, again, is going to be on with us talking about the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles wasn't the team that I would probably naturally select as my first team to start out this series of discussions about Major League Baseball for 2016. But we've got our Yankees guy coming up here in the next week. George Kurtz is going to talk Yankees with us. I've got Ben Nicholson from Sportsnet up in Canada. He's going to talk about the Blue Jays. We've also got some other guests on tap. Sean McAdam. From Comcast Sportsnet up here in Boston is going to talk about the Red Sox. So we've got a lot of people on board. Going to do the best we can to get as many local writers and bloggers as we can to talk about their teams. And Lenny is kind of our go-to guy. He knows everything. He has sources everywhere. And so we're going to talk baseball with him today, and it's going to be the Baltimore Orioles. Lenny, thanks a lot for coming on with me today. I really appreciate you talking baseball here. It's 11 o'clock on January 12th. We're supposed to get snow. And when we're supposed to get snow, that means we're supposed to be talking baseball.
That means no snow, and don't forget, I know everything and have all the tools. Yeah, it's exciting with spring training right around the corner. And I got to tell you, it's been a very interesting year in the off season. I don't recall so many free agents, viable free agents, still without a home, still finding a place. And I got to tell you, Chris, I started the off season saying that the Baltimore Orioles were going to be the most interesting team in the major leagues in the off season, only because of the fact that Chris Davis was such an important part of their future plans. I am shocked at this point to see not only Cespedes and Upton and Ian Desmond and Dexter Fowler, but I am shocked to see Chris Davis still out there, and I have no clue as to how this game between the Orioles and Chris Davis is being played out, and I have no clue as to what's going to happen and where Chris Davis will finally wind up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if they're the most interesting. You might be right. I haven't looked at the league in the whole in that perspective enough to be able to agree or disagree with you when it comes to it, but I definitely agree they're interesting. They're interesting every season, if for no other reason is that they seem to do nothing, and yet they always end up being competitive. And Chris Davis is one of the interesting ones. Do you think Chris Davis is important to them because he's more important to them? Or do you think Chris Davis is that kind of impact player where maybe he can be a difference maker somewhere else just as much as he could be a difference maker in Baltimore.
No, I think Chris Davis could be the most important player in the offseason to a team, and that's only because, look, last year the Orioles lost Sammy Sosa, they lost Nick Markakis, and they had Matt Wieters out, and they still finished third in home runs, okay? And a big part of that was because of Chris Davis. Now, you take Chris Davis out of this lineup, they fortunately, they may have saved themselves just a bit by signing Mark Trumbo early on, but you take Chris Davis out of this lineup, and the Baltimore Oriole fan base is not going to be happy. Now, I take the position, and I don't. This is what I don't understand. I know Peter Angelos is a smart man, but why he doesn't tell his general manager, make Chris Davis that $150 million offer, okay? Give him 15 minutes to say yes or no. If after 15 minutes he doesn't give you an answer, then offer $100 million, a $50 million savings to Justin Upton. Give him 20 minutes to give you an answer. If he doesn't give you that answer, then offer less than $100 million to Cespedes, and they'll come up with one of those guys. That's for sure. And the meanwhile, they're sitting. I don't know if that rumor has it the offer was pulled off the table. For $150 million. I have no idea if that's the case, but when you see Scott Boras marketing Chris Davis as a corner outfielder, maybe he can play left field. He definitely can't play right field. You got to scratch your head and wonder what's going on.
And let me ask you about that, because this isn't really specific to an Orioles question, but because it involves Chris Davis, we can kind of smudge it. We can squeeze it in there. Is Scott Boras why the market isn't moving? You mentioned how the market isn't moving at all, and this is one of the weirder off-seasons yet. Is it because all of the players that are still remaining, or at least a lot of them, are Scott Boras guys, and so he's just holding them all until someone jumps and pays the money that they need to pay, and then they all fall in line behind him, and so Boras, essentially, by holding everybody hostage, increases the value for all of the guys after him as well, and they're all his clients to boot.
I think it's a lot simpler than that. You take a look at the landscape now of general managers in Major League Baseball. It's beginning to change with the younger sabermetrician guys taking over. Led, of course, by Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer. Everybody trying to now do the Chicago. You know, baseball is such a copycat league. You know, if Mariano Rivera becomes the setup man for John Wetland, then everybody wants the setup man. Kansas City comes up with three guys in the bullpen. Now everybody wants three guys in the bullpen. What's happening now with the general managers in Major League Baseball finally waking up and realizing that these long-term contracts just kill you. Albert Pujols, you could just go on and on. A-Rod, these long-term contracts, they kill you. And they're starting to, pull back a little bit from the long-term contracts. And I think that's what it is more than Scott Boras, because to me, Chris, if he was offered $150 million or anything close to it and he didn't take it, something's wrong somewhere. And I don't know. If Scott Boras pulled that off the table, then I think there's a big problem here. But I think it's more of the young general managers and a change of philosophy, which is going to make for an interesting collective bargaining agreement. The other thing, of course, is that compensation pick. That's a big factor as well. People, teams don't want to give up that compensation pick. There's a lot of teams in baseball that are actually retooling. I won't use the word rebuilding. We'll use the word retooling. And the draft pick has just become more and more, important to every team.
Absolutely. I do find it interesting, and maybe it is probably being a little bit too maybe conspiratorial to give Scott Boras all the credit. But the fact that, for example, Cespedes is asking for $150, it's interesting that Davis has $150 on the table. So if Davis is presumably more valuable and should get paid more than Cespedes, then if Cespedes is asking for $150, then Davis has to get $175 or $180, right? It seems like that kind of domino effect could be taken.
No, if he gets $150, if Cespedes gets $150, Cespedes will get $80. You'll see.
I agree with you. He should. $150 is crazy. I would never give Cespedes that kind of money. And I think that's part of the craziness of this offseason as well, is that
Yeah.
All of these
it's
guys
crazy for
are
Chris
good.
Davis, too. Do you really think that? No, I mean, there's no secret. You heard about that $150 million, I forget how many years. But is that a crazy for him to turn that down? I think this may be the biggest blunder in the history of the offseason.
There's a lot of blunders. I remember when Nomar Garciaparra turned down a lot of money, and I remember when a lot of people have. But, yeah, I do believe that as much as I think this is one of the deeper free agent classes, it's not, I think, as good at the top. I mean, Jason Hayward getting that money, I think, is insane. So so for all the other guys to demand that kind of money, I agree. I think it's way too much. But when Pablo Sandoval gets 90 last year, if Pablo Sandoval gets 90, then Yennis Cespedes and Davis need 130, 140, 150 because – Pablo Sandoval is really worth 40. So when he gets 90, I guess the assumed inflation it kind of does that. But let's get back to the Orioles a little bit because we are going to talk about offseason and we'll progress into that as well. Let me first ask you about the Orioles in 2015. This time last season, the Orioles ended up 81-81. They were 500 team. This time last season, what kind of team did you think they had, and what kind of season do you think they had in 2015?
Well, like I say, I thought they were mediocre with the loss of Sosa, the loss of Matt Wieters going for the Tommy John surgery, and of course losing Nick Markakis as well. I did not think they were a very strong team, and I think they played out almost exactly like I thought. I expected Manny Machado to come to the front. I was a little concerned with Adam Jones. But with Jones, Davis, and Machado leading the way, the offense was good enough. Like I said, they were third in home runs and ninth in runs scored. But it was the pitching staff that I thought was suspect, and I still do this year.
Yeah, and you mean Nelson Cruz, of course. You said Sammy Sosa a couple times, but with
the
steroids.
I did say Sammy Sosa. Somehow they're the same player to me. I don't know why. All right, but I said Sammy Sosa. We meant Nelson Cruz, ladies and gentlemen.
And let me ask you, because
they didn't say Boog Powell, right?
You did not you did not mention Boog Powell when you were talking about Nick Markakis, so that was a good one.
Yes.
Now, Manny Machado, over the years, or at least over the last couple years, people have wanted to put him in the same category as Mike Trout and Bryce Harper, and I've looked at him and just seen him as a tier below both of those guys. Harper, based on potential, because until 2015 he had never done it, but he obviously shows massive amounts of potential before that. And Mike Trout starting one of the best careers maybe we could ever see if he can do this for a long period of time. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. was just inducted into the Hall of Fame with the highest percentage of vote ever, and Mike Trout could end up being better than Griffey if he can keep doing this, and that's a lot to ask. But that's the kind of trend that a Mike Trout is on. So to put Manny Machado with those two guys, to me, has always been a little bit overly aggressive. But then you look at what he did in 2015, 35 homers, 20 steals, he had .286. All of a sudden, I'm starting to look and say, you know what? I was telling people to hold on and slow their roll a little bit. Maybe Manny Machado, with Trout stealing less bases, with Machado hitting like that, maybe he belongs in that class. Was 2015 the first of many of these great, great years? Or did Manny Machado have a career year in 2015 and maybe he'll come back to the pack at least a little bit?
No, I'm a firm believer that the magical year rarely, produces itself in back-to-back years and may never happen again to most players. But I think Machado's a little bit different. I think Machado, what we're getting confused with a little bit is, even though I think still, you know, you got to say Harper and Trout, because of their just tremendous upside, still have to be in tier number one by themselves. Machado was close, and what puts Machado in there is that Machado, because of his position eligibility at third base and maybe even getting the shortstop eligibility in some leagues, he may be the number one draft pick based in fantasy baseball. So I think we're getting a little confused there, but no question about it. At age 22, don't forget, coming off of surgeries, the whole deal, I think Machado is going to be up there. There's going to be an argument between Trout, Harper, and Machado. I just want to see the Orioles line up to be surrounded with players so that Machado is not respected so much that they don't pitch to him.
Yeah, I mean, again, 35 home runs, 20 stolen bases, .286 batting average, which to me is kind of the key. Batting average is not a stat that everyone cares about. But when you look at it and say, okay, he's got the home runs, he's got the stolen bases. Obviously, if you've got the home runs, you've got the slugging and the OPS there. when you've got a batting average of 286 and he's a Gold Glover, to me, that's what maybe, especially with these days, with the sabermetrics and with how much base running and defense is really valued to the point where it's probably overvalued, that puts him at least in the discussion. And to me, especially if they don't sign Davis, I don't know how Manny Machado does it again without Davis in the lineup, but it seems like for the Orioles to be competitive, they're going to need Machado to keep hitting 35 home runs and keep batting 286. Because I'm looking at this pitching staff, they were 18th in ERA, they were 16th in runs allowed, which, again, that's not bad. That's middle of the pack. But in the AL East, if you don't have a Chris Davis, if you're not third in home runs, you're 81 and 81. I'm not sure how you get to 90, which is sort of where you want to be if you want to guarantee or at least feel good about getting into the playoffs. Looking at this pitching staff, I didn't love it before, and I'm looking – I like Chris Tillman. He had a bad year last year. It's tough to get excited about Ubaldo Jimenez. Miguel Gonzalez, Kevin Gausman, which we don't know if he's a starter or a reliever. I want to ask you about that. But looking at this rotation, it looks like they're going to lose Wei-Yin Chen. How does this team get from 81 and 81 to maybe 90, even if they sign Chris Davis, if they don't add some pitching? What do they do there?
I think it's a big problem. And, of course, what makes Chris Davis even more important is the fact that they looks like they're going to use Wei-Yin Chen. And I don't understand why. I mean, he is a very serviceable pitcher. They don't have another lefty in that rotation. There seems to be no reason why they can't. They got him so cheap last year. Finally, they got to pay for him, and they don't want him unless they come up with somebody better. If they let Wei-Yin Chen just walk away, leaving them with Ubaldo and Tillman and Gausman and Miguel Gonzalez, and I don't even want to mention Vance Worley. I saw Dylan Bundy in the Arizona Fall League and just was not impressed. He just looked like he struggles. Kind of reminds me a little bit in stature of Roger Clemens with the thick legs and the whole deal, but he just, I don't know, you know, it just fell a little short of my expectations, so, excuse me, so I definitely think the Orioles, they have to, you know, for fan support and their fan base, they've got to do something, they almost have to sign Chris Davis or Wei-Yin Chen, and if they sign Justin Upton, I think that will hold them off, even Cespedes too, so it's going to be interesting to see. They're masters of their own fate, and I do believe they need a pitcher, and they absolutely need a bopper.
For me, when I think of the Orioles, I remember the Albert Bell signing, and how that turned out to be a medical disaster. And you look at what the Orioles do, and again, maybe I'm reading, you know, A plus B equals C. Maybe I'm reading that too much because that's not always the case. But they signed a huge contract with Bell. It was a disaster. It turns out that it was a medical disaster, and now you see the Orioles being the team known for failing everybody on physicals,
right,
and they're very inactive in the offseason. Do you think that that's – I was talking with Rob Nyer the other day, and he talked about how teams should not panic, and just because they made one bad free agent signing, it doesn't mean they should never make another one ever again. But it looks like the Orioles have been doing that for 20, 25 years now, ever since Albert Bell. You buy into that a little bit? Could that be why?
No, absolutely. Every transaction is a transaction within itself. You can't be scared if you make a bad trade. You can't be scared if you spend a lot of money on giving a prospect a bonus and it doesn't pan out. Doesn't mean you're not going to go ahead and go get another prospect. But what you got to do is you got to be active. And even at this point, we don't know if they're inactive or if they're just being patient and being smart, waiting for the prices to come down. And it looks like they are for Cespedes and Upton. And they can probably, I'll tell you what, if they put 140, you tell me one thing. Here's what's happening. Slowly but surely, the free agents are getting gobbled up. If you put Chris Davis on the table now, $135 million, if he doesn't take it, who's going to give him $135 million? St. Louis Cardinals, they've already said no way, and it looks like they're going to make it a big pitch for one of the Colorado outfielders, namely Carlos Gonzalez, with Gerardo Power indicating he wants to go to Colorado, or Colorado's interested. That tells you one of those guys is going, so maybe St. Louis will take one of those guys. I still say that he's going to wind up, if not with Baltimore, he may wind up with Houston, the Houston Astros. There's been talk, and you know, you've heard the rumors about the Red Sox being interested in Chris Davis. But really, who's going to give Chris Davis $135 to $140 million? I can't figure it out. And I just don't get it. They signed Mark Trumbo, so that takes a little bit away from takes a little bit of the edge off of the power loss. But Trumbo is penciled in to play right field, and it eliminates guys like Pedro Alvarez, who I thought might be. You can't have two of the worst defensive players in your lineup. If you put, I'm sure they could sign Pedro Alvarez and put him at first base and say, well, instead of getting Chris Davis's 40 home runs, we'll get 30 home runs and we'll save ourselves $100 million, but you can't put him in your lineup if you already got Mark Trumbo there. And then, of course, we'll get to the signing of Hum Soo Kim, who I thought that was a terrific signing. But anyway, we don't know. Are they being patient? Are they being smart? Or I have no idea. Or are they just being foolish?
I think you could look at this as being a situation where it's just bad timing, because, like I said, I think this is one of the deeper classes. Whether you want to make a trade, that's part of the reason why we're in this pause, is that there's a lot of players you can either trade for or sign, and it seems like nobody wants to make the move. Jordan Zimmermann did it early. He just said, look, I'm signing. It looked like he signed at kind of a discount, but he said, look, I want to sign. This is where I want to go. So he jumped the market and really did it early. It looks like Alex Gordon kind of did that too. He gave him a hometown discount to the Royals, but I think he was just fed up with waiting, and he just jumped the market and said, look, this is good enough. I can probably get another 20 or 30 if I wait another 3 weeks, but I'm just going to sign now because I just want it over with. Maybe that's part of it, and that's probably the biggest thing, is that there's so much out there. It's so deep right now, but at the same time, it's so overpriced. Like you said, I can see giving Davis 130, but I can't see giving Cespedes 150. To me, that is insane. So while I think it's a deep market, it's a grossly overpaid market. It'd be one thing if you had Mike Trout on the market and you're going to give him $250 million. So sort of like the pitchers. David Price gets $207 or $217, whatever it was. That's fine. I actually don't have a big problem with giving him $217. But that also means that Jordan Zimmermann should be $90. Jordan Zimmermann shouldn't be $170 because Price is $217. That's what it looks like with the outfielders, because there's no superstar outfielder, and I don't see Jason Hayward as being one. All of a sudden, they all boost their values up, and they're demanding too much. I really do. I agree. I think they're demanding too much. I can see Davis getting 130 or 140, but I can't give Cespedes 150.
And also, let's not forget the fact that there are quite a few teams that have already taken themselves out of the hunt for big-time free agents because they really don't feel that they're competitive. And we'll use the word retooling. There are a lot of teams that have started to retool. Cincinnati, Milwaukee, you can just go on and on. Philadelphia, Atlanta, mainly in the National League, I will say. But there's a lot of teams in the American League that really do not have a great chance to win. And also, and here's the key, you've got the Dodgers and you've got the Yankees, two traditional money burners, who have made the commitment to austerity, all right, by saying, look, we spent $300 million and we wind up competing in the playoffs against teams that spend less than $100 million. Maybe we're not doing it right. So the Dodgers are obviously cutting back just a little bit, the Yankees as well. The Red Sox made a huge splash already getting David Price. So when you take those three teams out of the equation for $150 million player, who's left? Who's that? The Angels have said they're not going over the salary cap of the luxury tax, so, and they're about $30 million away from it. So it takes Audie Marino's team out of it as well, if they're telling the truth. Not a lot of teams who will go that extra yard for these expensive free agents with the big contracts.
Now, to sum it up on the offensive side, if they don't get Davis, do you think they will get one of those other big names? Do you feel confident about that? Or is it just a possibility and it's 50-50? Because it seems like if they lose Chen and they lose Davis and they don't add at least one of the big bats, it seems like it's difficult to put the Orioles in as a contender, which is the next topic we're going to get to here. So how confident do you feel that the Orioles will be if they don't get Davis, that they will get Upton or Cespedes? And really, those are the two you're probably really talking about, right?
Sure, I think it's a pretty good chance, because I look at the White Sox, a contender for a free agent, a White Sox, a team that does not have to give up any compensation because they finished so poorly last year. I take a look at Detroit, who I think Detroit winds up with Cespedes, although he appears to be a terrific fit in Baltimore. And so I think they have a pretty good shot, you know. I think Detroit, the White Sox, keeping the Angels out of it. I think those are the teams that have the best chance to sign the free agent, and I think there'll be a lot of trades. I think there'll still be some trades going on with the San Diego pitching staff, with the Colorado outfielders, but the free agents, I think there's three or four teams in the mix, Baltimore being one of them. The only question is, there's only about two or three players of, maybe four of worth, and Desmond, Fowler, Cespedes, and Upton. So we'll see. And, of course, Chris Davis. So who's going to get who? It's like musical chairs, but I think Baltimore's definitely in the game.
And just to finalize with Chris Davis, the longer it waits and the less interest there seems to be, the more likely everyone feels that he will stay in Baltimore. That's always the case. Anytime a guy who's linked to one place, and we're not hearing lots of rumors about mystery teams or anything like that, everyone assumes they're going to go back to their original club. But to me also, the longer you wait, you're just waiting for someone to all of a sudden change their mind and say, look, nobody wants this guy. He's got to be anxious to sign. Someone jumps in and grabs him. If you had to handicap it right now, what percentage would you put on it that Davis goes back to Baltimore? I mean, if that's likely, then the Orioles can feel good. They're going to get the guy that they want. But what do you think the chances are that he actually does go back there?
Well, just remember, okay, this is a chance and not a skill. I have no idea what the percentage is. I think if they care about their fan base, they have to sign Chris Davis. But I don't think they'll be upset if they sign Upton. Look, if I said 50-50, I have no idea. But I know they want him. Otherwise, they would have cut bait and they would have signed somebody else already. So, again, give him 15 minutes to make up his decision at 150 or 140, then go to Upton. Take it or leave it. Take it. Somebody's going to pull the trigger and say yes, because they're running out of, not running out of time, but they're running out of teams. So somebody's going to have to make the decision.
Yeah, I'm willing to put a number on. I'm putting it at 70%. I think he's 70% back to the Orioles. I'm putting it at 70. I'm not against putting it at that number. Again, we haven't heard any legitimate reasons why he'd go somewhere else. So I'm going to put it at 70. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Lenny Melnick here about the Baltimore Orioles. We're going to preview the 2016 Orioles. Again, this is a podcast to be named later. We're going to do the best we can to get every single team an individual podcast. We look at their 2015. We look at their offseason. We look ahead to 2016. We're going to try to do that with every single team up until opening day. Today we're doing Baltimore Orioles with Lenny Melnick. You can follow him on Twitter, at Lenny Melnick. Lenny, let's get into the pitching a little bit before we project on 2016. I'm looking at the free agent pitchers still available, and it looks like Chen's going somewhere else, and oddly, and it kind of is a stunner to me, it looks like he's going to be a Marlin. I can honestly say they wouldn't have been who I predicted for Wei-Yin Chen a month ago, but at least today, it looks like they have a good shot at it. But you've got Doug Fister. Then you've got guys like, who is not a very good pitcher either. I'm not a big Fister guy. Giovanni Gallardo, you got Jeremy Guthrie, who at one time and another was an Oriole. Ian Kennedy's still out there. Matt Latos, Tim Lincecum's going to look for a team here in the not-too-distant future. And then there's just a whole bunch of also-rans or old guys or kind of borderline guys that can't even start. If, in fact, the Orioles are going to lose Wei-Yin Chen, and then you look at their depth chart, as we talked about before, Chris Tillman coming off an off year, Ubaldo Jimenez, who one day looks like an ace and a Cy Young candidate, and the next he looks like he shouldn't even be playing baseball. Maybe he should be playing cricket. And Miguel Gonzalez, Kevin Gausman, Mike Wright. I mean, that's their projected starting rotation right now. Even if they keep Chris Davis, how do they get above 81 and 81 with those starters? And even if they do add an Ian Kennedy or one of those guys, are they really even close to getting to 88 to 92 wins?
Well, it's not Ian Kennedy. The name that's been linked to Baltimore for as long as Chris Davis's name has been out there has been Giovanni Gallardo. So he's an innings eater. He's a very serviceable pitcher. That's all you're going to get is somebody serviceable. They need the innings. They don't even know what they're going to get in Kevin Gausman yet. And in the minor league system for the Orioles, there's nobody. I mean, Hunter Harvey, he's got his injury. Dylan Bundy, I think, has just been a disappointment. Michael Givens, more of a bullpen guy. So there's nobody really on the horizon ready to come up and help them. They have to get an innings eater, and they have to get Gallardo. I wouldn't be surprised if you hear Gallardo signing with the Orioles relatively quickly. So I'm going to go with Gallardo as a potential Baltimore Orioles starter.
But does that get them above 81 and 81?
I'll tell you what gets them above that, okay? Here's what's going to get them above it. Signing Chris Davis, all right? Signing Chris Davis. You got Jonathan Scope at second base, a guy who last year, a right-handed hitter, he hit over 300 against righties. He struggled with lefties. So I think he could hit 20 home runs and really become a terrific player. If his improvement has to be made against lefties, not righties, I think he can do it, and I think he will. And also a very sneaky, a very sneaky signing for Major League Baseball is the outfielder that they signed from Korea, who pencils into a pretty nice left fielder. I'm just searching in my memory for his name. You know who I'm talking about?
Yoon-Soo Kim?
Yeah, that's right. Just on the tip of my tongue. All right, Yoon-Soo Kim is going to play left field, not first base. He's an adequate fielder. But here's the thing. On-base percentage last year was one of the bigger weaknesses. They were 12th in the American League in on-base percentage. This guy, Kim, has walked more times in his career than he has struck out, and he had a .438 on-base percentage, exactly what this team needs. He will likely bat second in the order, and he will be, if he can do what he's supposed to do, he'll be a tremendous lift along with Jonathan Scope and along with the return of Matt Wieters. So I think the Orioles offense could be okay. Chris Davis makes them from okay to pretty darn good, which is what they've been, and that's the only way. They need something special offensively in order to carry this poor pitching staff. The bullpen is terrific with Darren O'Day leading the way. And of course, Zach Britton is a very adequate closer. And I think that Chris Davis is important. You know, getting back to Chris Davis again, he's important. They got to be better than average offensively. I also like, but I do like their bullpen. I think that Britton and O'Day, Brad Brack, the hard thrower, used to be with San Diego, is there. I think if Givens comes up, they'll use him in the bullpen. So I'm kind of thinking that this team, unfortunately, I think the Red Sox will be better. I think the Yankees, if their pitching staff is okay. And I think Tampa is a very underrated team. Everybody talks about the Mets and their pitching staff. But when you got Chris Archer, Jake Odorizzi, Drew Smyly, and Matt Moore, and a returning Alex Cobb, I'll put this Tampa pitching staff up against the Mets pitching staff almost any day. So the only thing is I think they're going to trade Odorizzi to the Cubs. That has been rumored. Odorizzi, Boxberger, McGee, those three guys, the Cubs and Tampa have been in heavy talks to get one of those guys. So we'll see what happens there. But, I think the Orioles are a .500 team at best, and we got to see what happens with Chris Davis.
The one place where maybe, and I like the bullpen quite a bit as well, their bullpen is one of the better ones in the game. So that is seemingly probably their strength. If they lose Chris Davis, the bullpen is absolutely their number one asset. But they did, if they're going to try to get better, one way that you can without adding players and without losing too many is that players can have better seasons this year than they did last year. And while it would be difficult for Manny Machado to have a better year, you look at J.J. Hardy and you look at Mark Trumbo and you look at Matt Wieters, those guys didn't have good 2015. What are you expecting from those three guys in 2016? Are they going to be the same as they were last year, or are you expecting a significant amount more, which maybe that helps the Orioles get 5 or 6 more wins if those three guys can maybe have a better season than they did last year?
You know, I remember being in the Arizona Fall League 3 or 4 years ago, sitting next to a guy with a jugs gun. You know what that means. He's a scout. There's a lot of scouts there. And he says to me, Lenny, I can't believe we're sitting here in the Arizona Fall League and watching a Hall of Famer. And his reference was to Matt Wieters, a switch hitting catcher, who when he stepped into the batter's box for the first time, I said, you're right. He looks so So impressive, and now he's got to do it. He really hasn't had that big season, but he could have a season like Johnny Bench, like Carl. He could have a monster season, and I think that it's time. Jonathan Scope, like I mentioned, I think he'll be a much improved second baseman, and evidenced by the fact that he struggled a little bit with lefties, not righties. He's a right-handed hitter. I think the addition of the Korean kid, Hung Soo Kim, is going to help them, giving him exactly what they need, which is not necessarily the power. He's only about a 15-home run guy, but his on-base percentage is terrific. You'll get the home runs out of Trumbo. And then now that you got to figure out a place to put a DH or an outfielder, Jimmy Paredes just doesn't fill the bill for me. So, I think the Orioles offensively have the potential, and I think Scope will be better, Weeders will be better, Hung Soo Kim will be a great addition, and Mark Trumbo will play every day.
And J.J. Hardy was disappointing last year. You think he can get back to at least being a positive offensive player, or is he more just defense now?
Well, I don't know what he is. Hardy capable of hitting the long ball. There have been rumors that Ian Desmond may wind up in Baltimore, but because they do need, Hardy may have lost a step also at shortstop. And the other position that they have open is the DH spot. Moving Hardy to DH or having Ian Desmond be the DH wouldn't be the worst idea. A lot of talk about Desmond signing that one-year deal, and he's got to be in a good ballpark. And, Baltimore may be it's all speculation. I'm just rambling on it because, to me that's the fun. Just, hey, Ian Desmond on the Orioles, that's interesting. But his name has been mentioned. It's all about the pitching, and I think Chris Davis is the key to the offense, and I think Kevin Gausman is the key to the pitching.
That was going to be my next question, Kevin Gausman. They've jerked him around a little bit between the majors and the minors, between the bullpen and the starting. Any sense or feel for what his role is going to be this year and what you think he may produce?
Well, I think they are finally at a point where they got to either, say put up or shut up. They got to put him in the rotation and let him sink or swim. Simple as that. He's 25 years old. He underwent, this LASIK surgery after the season, and he was wearing glasses in 2015. He won't need to. I don't know even know if that'll make a difference. All right, if whether you're wearing glasses or not makes you into a better player. Well. Or glasses, PEDs? I don't really know. But
surgery might be.
Forgive me while I. You know, there were some sports writers that actually. excuse me. Gosh. Some sports writers claim that Coors Field is a PED, and that's why Todd Helton and Larry Walker weren't voted to the Hall of Fame. But that's just another thing. Yeah, on Gausman. Right, this is his year. I have no idea which way it's going to go. I've only seen him pitch once. I know he's got the velocity to be a good pitcher, but he lacks that command. He still can't put the ball where he wants it. That's the problem. He may have good control, but he can't spot the ball, and that's the big deal. That's the big problem. So we'll see if he can, if he can do it. He doesn't have any options, I don't think. I think he's out of options, so they can't jerk him around and send him up and down.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot, and, of course, I will not hold you to it, but I will quote it later.
Hold me to it, man. I love it. I love when people hold me to it.
You kind of summed up where you thought the Orioles were in the American League East race, but let me get specific and put it on there so we have it as a quote. Where do they finish in the AL East, and what do you think their record will be?
I think the question is, will they finish in the AL East? I'm going with the Red Sox number one. I'm going, because I like you, Red Sox, number one. I'm going to go with Toronto, number two. I'm going to go with Tampa, number three. I'm going to go with the Yankees, number four, and the Orioles, number five.
And what kind of record are you looking at?
Under 500, let's put it that way.
Well, they would have to be. It would be a pretty shocker to see all of the teams in the AL East.
Oh, I don't think it would be a shocker. There's going to be a division where everybody's going to be wasn't there a division last year where everybody was close to 500, if I'm not mistaken?
Well,
but
the Red Sox,
I don't think they're going to be a terrible team. The off season is not over with yet, so of course there are moves to be made that will determine exactly how good they will be. But I I really do think, though, they're not a not a contender based upon the pitching staff, so they'll finish at the bottom of the pack.
Yeah, the Red Sox had 78 wins, though they finished as one of the best teams in baseball the last month or so. So they were close to 500, and they were the last place team in the elite at 78 wins. But that actually made them one of the better divisions in baseball as far as winners versus losers. 78 wins, I think, was the best record of any division loser. So, yeah, you could get near 500 at the very least. All right, Lenny, thanks a lot for talking to Orioles. Any last notes or news or nuggets you want to toss us as far as the Orioles go before we get out of here?
Only if you know the Heimlich maneuver, send me an email so I can give it to Andrea so she could stop me from coughing. No, other than that, I'm kind of looking forward. This month of January, which is notoriously a very quiet month, could be one of the most exciting months that we have in the Hot Stove League, with so many different teams now starting to talk trade. And so many teams, so many good free agents out there. I'm going to be excited about the month of January in terms of all the off-season moves.
Absolutely. And it may even make February interesting, to be honest. I mean, it is January 12th. For all these signings and tradings to happen 3 weeks from now wouldn't be a shocker. So we could be talking about the Super Bowl and Major League Baseball hot stove trades all in February. That would be that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Lenny, I know you're doing a great job with your website. Tell people where they can find you and where they should join your fraternity there, and give them that kind of information as well.
By the way, do you remember the only off-season signing in the month of January last year? Do you remember what that was?
I have no
idea.
There
was only one major signing in the month of January last year.
I cannot think of it.
Max Scherzer signing with the Washington team coming out of nowhere. Right? And that was in January. Anyway, Lenny Melnick, FantasySports.com. That's our fraternity. All right? We're passionate baseball, football, basketball, we're passionate sports fans. I urge you to come on over, take a look. There's a section about history, the history of sports. Every couple of days we put up a new one. My rankings are going up. This is the first year I'm ever doing rankings. Okay, so I got rankings going up starting today, and just so many great things. Not necessarily a fantasy sports site, but it's a site for passionate sports fans. And we ask you to introduce yourself when you come on, because that's part of the fraternity, and we're all there to talk sports, argue, help each other with our daily fantasy sports, and well, our season fantasy sports. And you don't even have to be a fantasy fan. If you're a sports fan, a baseball fan, come on over. We'll talk about Willie, Mickey, and the Duke.
Sounds good to me. Lenny Melnick, thanks a lot for coming on and talking about the Orioles today.
Thank you, Chris. Pleasure.
All right. That is a podcast to be named later today with guest Lenny Melnick. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at Lenny Melnick. We're going to be doing these every single couple days. So we're going to try to do as many as we can. I want to get all of the 30 teams into the queue before the opening day. I'd like to preview every single division if we can. I'm trying to get insiders and local writers and bloggers so that we have an inside look at a team from someone who is literally in the zip code or in the area code that they're talking about. Lenny Melnick is not a Baltimore Orioles guy, but he's an all-around guy. He knows it all. He has a multiple of skills and utilities. He's a five-tool baseball fanatic. So when we are going to bring someone on who isn't local, Lenny is as good a guy as any to bring on. So that's why we had him on today talking about the Baltimore Orioles. We're going to go through the AL East this week. Coming up in the next couple of days, we're going to have Ben Nicholson from Ben Nicholson Smith from Toronto. He covers the Toronto Blue Jays. He used to work over at Major League Baseball Rumors, MLBRumors.com, and he's been doing it for a couple of years now. He's been covering the Toronto Blue Jays. He's going to be coming on Wednesday afternoon at 3:00 Eastern time. So a day from now, 3:00 Eastern, I'll be talking about the Toronto Blue Jays with Ben Nicholson Smith. Then on Thursday, Sean McAdam from the Boston Red Sox, he covers the Boston Red Sox for Comcast.net. I'm just mumbling all this information. There's so many of these writers and bloggers that I've been trying to get in touch with that I know all their names and I know who they work for, but I'm just screwing up the information. I apologize to everybody out there. But Sean McAdam from Comcast.net, he's going to be talking Red Sox with us at noontime on Thursday. He's always good. I've had him on my podcast a multiple of times. Very good at covering the Red Sox. Good all-around baseball. So if I can't find people to do some of the other teams, I'm hoping to have him come on and talk about them. But he's specific to the Red Sox when it comes to local. He does some really great work there. He's going to be on Thursday. George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com. He's a fantasy guy that also covers Major League Baseball. He was actually offered a few jobs to cover teams for different media outlets in the New York area. So while he is mostly a fantasy person, he obviously knows Major League Baseball and has actually been offered jobs to cover the teams, not from a fantasy perspective, but from a baseball perspective. So he's going to be talking about the New York Yankees with us. I don't know who I'm going to bring on with the Tampa Bay Rays yet, but they'll be coming up next. I want to go division by division. I don't want to bounce around from the Jays and the Orioles all the way over to the Cardinals and things like that. I mean, from time to time, that will happen, but I'm going to try to do it in order the best I can. So this week is AL East week. We got the Orioles today. We've got the Jays tomorrow. We've got the Red Sox on Thursday. Maybe we'll do the Yankees on Thursday or Friday, and then or at the beginning of next week, and then we'll get the Tampa Bay Rays out of the way. And then we'll bump probably over maybe to the NL East. I don't know. We'll see what guests are available. But that's what we're going to try to do. All of these podcasts will be posted at minorleagueball.com. So if you're reading or not reading, you need to be going over there. A lot of my content and my articles are being posted over there. And these podcasts, that's where they will be. It's, again, minorleagueball.com. It's part of SB Nation. So if you want to tune in over there, that's where you can find these links. If you want to, you can follow us on over at Blog Talk Radio. You can go over there, join our podcast, and be alerted when the podcasts are airing. It's blogtalkradio.com, and then it's slash Bosco Nation. That's what I named it, Bosco Nation. So if you want to follow us so that you're alerted when the podcasts are coming, there's lots of ways to do that. But if you want to do it directly from the source, it's Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/Bosco Nation. But you can just type in a podcast to be named later, and you should be able to find it. As far as wanting to stay tuned with the podcast in other ways, or if you want to participate in the discussion about what's going on when it comes to all of the 30 baseball teams, you can do that on Facebook, or you can always follow me on Twitter. On Twitter, it's at CJMitch73. And again, I post links to all of our different podcasts. So if you just want to follow me there, I can direct you to wherever you need to go. And you can always message me as well on there. Or if you want to join our Facebook group and talk about the different podcasts or just talk about Major League Baseball in general, it's a podcast to be named later. And I forgot to ask Lenny, one of the questions I try to ask all the guests is, because it is a podcast to be named later, I want to give them an opportunity to name it. I forgot to do that with Lenny, so maybe we'll do that another time. But if you want to talk with us on Facebook, again, it's a podcast to be named later. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Again, thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast with Jay Jaffe. Fantastic totals. We're getting up near 1,000 listens already, and he only came on the show on Thursday. So almost 1,000 listens in less than 5 days, is really. Is fantastic. Hopefully it'll continue with these other podcasts, and hopefully this Major League Baseball series will work out well. Hopefully you'll be listening in. So head on over to minorleagueball.com for all my different articles, but also obviously to get links to the podcast as well. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Enjoy your Tuesday. We'll be back again tomorrow with Ben Nicholson-Smith from the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll be talking about them coming up next on Wednesday. Thanks everybody. Good luck and be safe.